This is an MUT Radio podcast.
The time now is 11:29 on the Tlhakane Midday Show. You are listening to MUT Radio. My name is Kanye May. And indeed, meanwhile, in the future, there are people like our guest who are doing incredibly interesting, innovative things in the world of innovation and finance, innovative finance, in fact. Barry Panulo is an investment professional with a decade's experience in financial innovation. His skill set includes feasibility assessment, structuring, appraisal of sustainable and impact business instruments. He is currently focused on enabling catalytic investment and climate finance work streams as an innovative finance consultant at the UN World Food Programme, at the Innovation Accelerator. And today, Barry is speaking to us from Munich to talk all about what is happening in the wonderfully wide world of innovative finance. He was about to tell us what financial innovation is.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Kanya. So financial innovation is building new financing tools and repurposing existing ones to optimize how money flows from those who have it towards those that need it. In the development context, this relates to allowing new money to flow towards development and humanitarian needs or to what's improving the effectiveness of money that's already being applied towards these sorts of purposes.
Okay, those are all some very big words. So can you tell us how does one get into that? How did you find yourself in that space?
Yeah, so a little bit accidentally, really. In high school, I wasn't really sure what to do in college, as many people maybe experience. And I decided to study finance at bachelor's level because it offered me a more flexible path into industry. So I could basically work in any sector that I wanted thereafter. But as I studied finance, I found an interest in the investment side of the profession, especially. And I decided that that was something I'd pursue further in postgraduate study. So I ended up doing a master's in investment management at UCT. And there I had a second crisis where I was not really sure how the stuff that I was learning was going to be relevant to the needs of communities such as mine. So I come from Malawi, which is one of the poorer countries on the continent. And I wanted to connect finance to the needs of some of these communities. And that's really where I came across innovative finance. And I found an opportunity with a specialist center at the University of Cape Town Graduate School of Business that was doing work in this area. And that gave me my start in the industry. And I've been working in this area ever since.
Yeah, this idea that finance, investing, all these things is about the individuals, about making money. It's about, but obviously you've touched on how that wasn't the goal. That wasn't where you wanted to take it. So how do you see the role of innovative finance addressing global challenges, specifically when you're looking at climate change and food insecurity?
That's really, really massive, right? Because a lot of people tend to think if you're doing humanitarian things, then it's the realm of charity, it's the realm of giving. But global giving is about $2 trillion every year. But if you look at the climate issue in of itself, if we're going to meet some of the net zero targets and we prevent the world from burning up basically over the next 20 to 30 years, then we need $2 trillion annually by itself, which would entirely eliminate all of the funding that's available through charitable sources. And that means you couldn't really spend on other social issues, such as poverty, etc. All of that would be going into climate. Similarly, for the issue of food security, WFP raises about $26 billion every year just to meet the needs of communities that are underserved in terms of access to quality nutrition. So the needs are much more sizable than can be served through charitable giving alone. And this is where we must widen the net towards repayable sources of finance, investors and the like, to see how can they apply their wealth towards making the world a better place. And there, there are much more sizable pools of funding available because global wealth overall is about in the realm of $500 trillion. So if you can start to find meaningful ways for that wealth to address some of the needs that we have on climate, with social issues, etc., whilst meeting some of the overall investment objectives of those pots of funding, then it becomes a win-win and we start to build a more sustainable future society and take care of our planet as well.
Yeah. So those are all very big picture ideas, right? Those are very big picture kind of save the world things, right? But what is your day-to-day what does your day-to-day look like with the UN World Food Programme's Innovation Accelerator?
Yeah, so I'm an innovative finance consultant at the Innovation Accelerator at the World Food Programme, and our unit is especially set up to allow organizations such as ourselves to connect to really enterprising organizations external to the UN system that might be working on topics related to food security, things like climate that also have a bearing on food security in the long term because they might impact, say, the frequency of droughts and tropical cyclones and things like that that then require a response on the part of WFP. So my role is to build some of these financial conduits for new money, especially to flow towards WFP. And so on a day-to-day basis, there's a lot of almost business development type work that needs to happen. So I write a lot of proposals. I sit in a lot of meetings with potential donors and investors trying to shape mutual value propositions, if you like, as to how we can give effect to some of their objectives in terms of creating a more sustainable world, whilst also mobilizing funds for WFP so that we can address the needs of vulnerable communities, many of them in the global south. So that's on one end, a lot of the business development type work, especially on the climate side for the moment. But then I'm also involved in an investment fund that we recently set up as WFP, where we provide loans to high impact ventures working on the topic of food security across the globe. And my role there is more to build out transactions, so to find really promising organizations that we can fund and to assess them and see how we can build out loans so that we can help them to deliver their mission and ultimately then contribute to WFPs as well.
Mm. So
I hope that gives you a picture.
Yeah. So finance isn't all about maths and spreadsheets, as we're finding out. I think that gives a lot of listeners hope if you're a student and you want to go into finance, but your maths is shocking, but it's fine. There's hope. So how does the financial landscape differ when you're working in, you've obviously touched on it, but can you think of any particular considerations that you make when you're working in a humanitarian context as opposed to what you would consider traditional finance sectors?
So the traditional finance sector might be more asset management or investment management, where you're running stocks or shares for people. And I think that because it's a more traditional space, there's a more established way of working. There's an investment process. So you pretty much know what you need to do, although, of course, there's a lot of risk around the different outcomes given that you're operating in financial markets. In the humanitarian space, innovative finance as a discipline is still pretty new. So it's been around for maybe two decades or so, which is not long in the broader scheme of things. So there's a lot of making it up as you go along that's still involved. So it's a very open-ended sector in that sense, but it's also a pretty challenging one because organizations such as the UN are quite procedural and might be seen as a bit bureaucratic. So on one end, you're trying to be quite innovative and bring in new ways of thinking, new ways of operating, but the organizations that you're implementing this thinking in are a little bit more slow moving, if you like, in terms of how they're set up. So yes, it is a little bit more open-ended, but also probably a bit more bureaucratic than mainstream finance.
Yeah. And would you say, I mean, obviously you're in the space, so you chose it, but, do you find it that works in your favor, that it is a bit more open-ended, that you do have a bit more freedom, besides the red tape and the paperwork and all those things? But, do you find that there's more space for creativity in, cause there's this idea that finance isn't creative, you know, that it's just numbers and all these things, but is there space for creativity?
There's a lot of space for creativity, and innovative finance really demands that. So yes, there's a lot of interesting things that we do that maybe even when I speak to other colleagues, friends of mine that operate in a more traditional finance space, they think, oh, this is actually pretty on there, what you're doing, right? To the extent that it works in my favor, I don't know, because you still need to take these wild ideas and implement them in a very traditional context. Mm-hmm. And that typically means that things do take longer to execute over time, because it's not just an ideation process and structuring a tool. It's also fundamentally a change management process, bringing the organization along with you to be able to implement that mechanism.
Yeah. And then can you think of any, or can you give us some examples or one example of a project or something that you worked on where people were saying, that's really creative. How did you get this approved? How are you able to do this?
Yeah. So there's something that I'm working on currently, that basically we buy a lot of insurance. Because when a drought happens, for instance, then we have a need for money immediately to respond to the needs of communities that need food, etc. And something that we're doing a bit more recently is to change up the equation and say, instead of sourcing some of that insurance from traditional insurers, can we source it from private market investors, right? So what's happening on the back end of that is that we're seeking to raise debt from investors and then use that as the insurance pool that will pay out WFP in case of a very severe drought in sub-Saharan Africa, for instance. And I think that a lot of the detail around structuring that, and that investors are not a really traditional party to an insurance contract, is a little bit out there for many people. But it's quite interesting also, because then it gives investors a new way to partner with WFP and also to get involved in what's a non-traditional market, such as insurance. Mm. So that's something that maybe catches people out, that, oh, you can actually get investors to get involved with WFP through an insurance mechanism. That's a little bit non-traditional.
Yeah, that is very cool. And I understood all of it. So thank you very much for the way that you're making this very accessible. So specifically with this project, you're looking at a new way of investors coming in. When you're looking at sustainable investments and generally sustainable finance, what role do ethical considerations play, and how do you align financial decisions with values of an organization or even an individual?
Yeah, so I think ethical considerations are critical across finance as a whole. I think generally you find yourself being a steward of either people's money or the money of, say, an organization that you're at the helm of. In the case of humanitarian applications, then I think it's even a bit more heightened, because ultimately, the money that we manage, in a sense, is for the benefit of especially vulnerable communities and people. So there's a higher bar that we need to hold ourselves to in this particular instance. So the way that we ensure that financial decisions align with the values is really, there's a very strong governance structure in place, and from the top level leadership, for instance, we have an innovative finance steering committee that's set up to also oversee some of these sorts of mechanisms that we come up with and make sure that they're of direct relevance to the needs of WFP and its beneficiaries. We have a lot of checks and balances in place to make sure that a lot of the ethical considerations are being taken care of, and WFP and the beneficiaries secure the best value for money from anything that we do.
Okay, so obviously those are little challenges, but it's worth the big picture. But what are some unique challenges or even opportunities that you encounter working on these innovations in an African context? What's your perspective on the current state of Africa and innovation in terms of our economies?
Yeah, and I think with a lot of the instruments that we work with, Africa is a very focal target geography for us, right? Because there's a lot of needs, definitely with regards to WFP's mission and eliminating hunger. So on one hand, we want to place a lot of our focus there. On the other side, in terms of funding mobilization, a lot of the resources are sitting in the global north, right? If you like. And sometimes you need to bring investors in the global north to better understand the risk profile of engaging with projects whose impact or potentially financial return in certain cases will be generated on the African continent. And in that perspective, then we need to spend a lot of time educating them on what the risks are. In certain cases, we need to do a lot of research up front. Case in point, when we talk about this insurance example that I gave a little bit earlier, right? We need to build out climate risk models for a range of African countries and then sell those to investors and make sure that they're comfortable basing their investment decision on the climate risk models that we've newly built out. So there's a lot of new things that they need to get their heads around, and it's really part of our job to also help them take that journey and then be comfortable in the end to direct their financial resources towards projects in Africa.
Okay. So it's safe to say that you are generally optimistic about Africa and what our economies can look like in the next 10 years.
Yes. I think cautiously optimistic. I think obviously over the longer term, if you look at things like population growth, resource endowment, etc., Africa is extremely well positioned. It's just a question of how well can we unlock that potential together as a financing community, as a development community, etc.
Okay. I'm taking that as a yes. So, on a more personal level, you're dealing with some massive social issues in your work, and on a platform like the World Food Programme with the United Nations, it can be, I would take it as quite an overwhelming task. So, how do you manage that on your psyche, on your personal, your day to day? How is that sitting on your shoulders?
Yes, it is a very fast-paced environment. I think there's a lot of pressure for us to deliver for beneficiaries. But I think a lot of the experience that I had also working in South Africa previously was still in a similar domain. So I think if you spend an early part of your career working in similar environments, then it's relatively easy to adapt to a context such as this one. But yeah, I think it's important to maintain an eye on the bigger picture, understand what you're working towards, and understand that it's not always going to be a linear path towards the end objective, but it's worth it in the end, and maintain a bit of a sense of humor as well, and just really keep yourself on an even keel. So
I think we need to hear that now with everything happening, especially, you know, in South Africa, it's an election year. We need to know what's... We need to keep everything light. We need to make, you know. So it is Africa Month here in Africa. Every month is Africa Month. But we're talking about this week and last week, we've been talking about the experiences that Africans are having living and working and studying overseas, particularly in America and Europe. So what has been your experience so far in moving, you know, Malawi, South Africa, and now in Germany? Well, what has that been like for you?
Yeah, it's been good. I think that versus the initial move to South Africa, there's a little bit more of a culture shock, if you like, right? Because The Malawi and South Africa are different. There's still, I think, like a lot of shared values. Maybe things like music and things like that. It's quite similar. Moving across here, culturally, things are quite different. I think people carry themselves in a slightly different way as well. And you sort of miss your African community, if you like. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a diaspora everywhere, and Joyce tried to make the, or rather take advantage of opportunities to connect with them. So, you know, like I still have an African community over here, but yeah, I think it is definitely a bigger shift in terms of mindset and culture and the sense of feeling at home moving over here versus that initial move, to South Africa mm-hmm. on a personal level.
Okay. And before we wrap up, what advice can you give to people interested in studying financial analysis, getting into innovative finance, or even just to work with organizations like the United Nations and the World Food Program?
Yeah, I think it's to be very curious, have a versatile mindset, flexible mindset, be learning orientated. I think earlier on you said, like, it's not all about spreadsheets and numbers, and that's definitely true as well. I think that you need to be as well-rounded as possible and be willing to take on new things. And yeah, maybe if you can start to find opportunities to already engage with an innovative finance community, like, for instance, the Bertha Center at the University of Cape Town does a lot of work around innovative finance, and they disseminate lessons like materials and things like that all the time, especially with the lens on sub-Saharan Africa as well. Mm. So if you start to look for a community that is doing this kind of work, you can definitely find it. And I think you'll find opportunities to also take on internships and things like that. And all that will serve you quite well as you start to seek to leverage that into a career with an organization such as the United Nations, because they're looking for people that are, that have a values alignment with doing this kind of work mm-hmm. and have taken on varied experiences that mean that they'll be ready to engage with a more open-ended nature of this work
yes.
as well.
Lovely. And again, before I let you go, can we expect to see you back in South Africa anytime soon, or are you enjoying having your Four Seasons and a thriving concert scene there in Germany?
South Africa, maybe not as likely, because South Africa doesn't really, like it's not really a focus country for WFP at present. I think there's other countries that maybe need our support like a little bit more, mm-hmm. but potentially in the next coming years.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time, Barry, and for your wonderful insights and enthusiasm for the world of innovative finance. We've been talking to Barry Panulo from the UN World Food Program's Innovation Accelerator, highlighting the global impact of innovative finance in humanitarian contexts.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.